All right, we're in 2 Samuel 15. Second Samuel 15. All right, David's on the run. He's abdicated the throne before Absalom. And on his way out of town, the high priests show up with the ark, and he tells them to take it back. That's what one of the last things we covered, I believe, 2 Samuel 15, 25. The king said unto Zadok, carry back the ark of God into the city. If I shall find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me again and show me both it and his habitation. But if he thus say, I have no delight in thee, behold, here am I. Let him do to me as seemeth good unto him. The king said also unto Zadok the priest, art not thou a seer? Return into the city in peace, and your two sons with you, Ahimaaz thy son, and Jonathan the son of Abiathar. See, I will tarry in the plain of the wilderness until there come word from you to certify me. Now, one of the things he's setting up here is these folks keep coming out to go with him in his absence, and he's basically sending them all back. The high priests he's sending back and says, you can be a help to me there. If there's something I need to know, you let me know. Verse 29, Zadok therefore and Abiathar carried the ark of God again to Jerusalem, and they tarried there. And David went up by the ascent of Mount Olivet. Know anybody else that went up by the ascent of Mount Olivet? The Lord Jesus Christ, right? And wept as he went up and had his head covered, and he went barefoot, and all the people that was with him covered every man his head, and they went up weeping as they went up. And one told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. Now, the thing about Ahithophel is an interesting gentleman. In fact, we talked a little bit about him last time, and somebody reminded me of something, frankly, I had forgotten all about. But it says there that Ahithophel, it said to turn Ahithophel's counsel into foolishness, which turns out to be a little bit of a task. Go over to chapter 16. Go over to chapter 16 and notice verse 23. And the counsel of Ahithophel, 16:23, which he counseled in those days, was as if a man had inquired at the oracle of God. Now, there are some things about his counsel. In fact, I have a sermon on why his counsel was wrong. But for what it's worth, in those days, you know, Ahithophel's counsel was almost as good as the oracle of God, it says there. Now, Ahithophel is real interesting. He's mentioned for the first time back in chapter 15, verse 12. And you wonder why it is that he winds up turning on David. And it takes a little bit of searching. There's only a couple of verses that point you to it. But turn to 2 Samuel 11 just a second and notice what it says. 2 Samuel 11. And Ahithophel's not in this verse. I just want you to note a couple things. And David, verse 3, 11:3, David sent and inquired after the woman. Now this is back with this sin issue. And one said, is not this Bathsheba the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite? Now whose daughter was she? Eliam's daughter. Just remember that. She is Eliam's daughter. Look at chapter 23, 2 Samuel 23. This is, of all things, a list of David's mighty men. And in verse 34, in this list, he's listing Eliphelet, the son of Ahasbai, the son of the Maacathite. And then notice, Eliam, the son of Ahithophel, the Gilonite. Now folks, in 2 Samuel 15, Ahithophel is called the Gilonite. Bathsheba's dad is Eliam. Here it says, Eliam was a mighty man, right? He was the son of Ahithophel. Well, if Bathsheba is Eliam's daughter, and Eliam is Ahithophel's son, that makes Ahithophel Bathsheba's grandfather. And so that is her personal slant on this whole issue. In other words, I'm assuming that David knew of the relation and all that, but apparently, at least something that you can read into it, is that for this time, since Bathsheba was betrayed and Uriah the Hittite killed, her dad has been David's counselor. Her grandfather's been David's counselor, Ahithophel. And apparently, once David gets down, Ahithophel is ready to take it to him. But it's one of those interpersonal things. All right, 2 Samuel 15:31. But you'd have to be a Bible believer and have confidence in the words to be able to find out what the relationship was. All right, verse 31. And one told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. Now, whether that was accomplished or not, I don't know. But Ahithophel did some things, and we'll talk about that later. Verse 32, and it came to pass that when David was come to the top of the mount where he worshipped God, behold, Hushai the Archite came to meet him with his coat rent and earth upon his head. Now, in 1 Chronicles 27, it says that Hushai is David's companion. He's not just his counselor, but he's his friend, an intimate friend. Apparently, not so much a counselor as a companion. And it says in verse 33, unto whom David said, if thou passest on with me, then thou shalt be a burden unto me. Now, I don't know if he's thinking about an age issue, a health issue, the fact that he doesn't want his best friend there to get killed and have to be on the run, be an outcast and all that. I'm not sure. But verse 34, but if thou return to the city and say unto Absalom, I will be thy servant, O king, as I have been thy father's servant hitherto, so will I now also be thy servant. Then mayest thou for me defeat the counsel of Ahithophel. That's twice he said something about the counsel of Ahithophel. Apparently, David is more concerned about Ahithophel's counsel than he is Absalom himself. And it's worth thinking about that sometimes, you know, somebody's friend, somebody's counselor, where somebody is getting counsel is more the enemy than the person who's wrong in their heart to start with. Verse 35. So David has both high priests, Abiathar and Zadok, back in the city, and they are still pretty much on his side, and they're going to see what they can do to overthrow the situation. Hushai the Archite is going back in. Verse 35. And how would you like to be in that position? You know how the king's courts got turned over. I mean, what keeps Absalom from taking Hushai and stringing him up immediately? Well, next to nothing. It's the whim of the king, who he wants on his staff, who he wants as among his advisors and counselors. Why keep somebody around from the old regime? Verse 35, so it's still takes a lot of guts. Hast thou not there with thee Zadok and Abiathar the priest? Therefore it shall be that what things soever thou shalt hear out of the king's house, thou shalt tell it to Zadok and Abiathar the priests. Behold, they have there with them their two sons, Ahimaaz, Zadok's son, and Jonathan, Abiathar's son. By them ye shall send unto me everything that ye can hear. So Hushai, David's friend, came into the city, and Absalom came into Jerusalem. All right, 16:1. And when David was a little past the top of the hill, behold, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him. Now remember this thing that happened a few chapters back. Goes and retrieves Mephibosheth, asks in fact, the servant Ziba, And Ziba is Mephibosheth's servant, and Ziba tells David where Mephibosheth is, and everything's fine, except that apparently Ziba has a hand in this game here. Behold, Ziba, verse 1, the servant of Mephibosheth met him with a couple of asses saddled, and upon them 200 loaves of bread, 100 bunches of raisins, 100 of summer fruits, and a bottle of wine. And the king said unto Ziba, what meanest thou by these? And Ziba said, the asses be for the king's household to ride on, and the bread and summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine that such be as be faint in the wilderness may drink. And the king said, and where is thy master's son? And Ziba said unto the king, behold, he abideth at Jerusalem, for he said, today shalt the house of Israel restore me the kingdom of my father. Now, there is a major betrayal going on here. Either Mephibosheth says that and lies later, or else Ziba is trying to get a leg up on his master and is going to use the fact that his master, Mephibosheth, is lame and can't get around to actually achieve, I suppose, what is achieved here. Look in verse 4. Then said the king to Ziba, behold, thine are all that pertain unto Mephibosheth. And so he basically turns over everything that he was going to give Mephibosheth, all the apparently all the land and cattle and everything that was Mephibosheth's. He said, okay, that's all yours now. Now the thing about it, I think you know this, look in 19, chapter 19. And David's fought the battle and he's headed back into Jerusalem. And we'll go over this more later, but in verse 24, 19:24, Mephibosheth shows back up. And Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king and had neither dressed his feet nor trimmed his beard and washed his clothes from the day the king departed until the day he came again in peace. And it came to pass when he was come to Jerusalem to meet the king, that the king said unto him, wherefore wentest not thou with me, Mephibosheth? And he answered, my lord, O king, my servant deceived me. For thy servant said, I'll saddle me an ass that I may ride thereon and go to the king, because thy servant is lame. And he hath slandered thy servant unto my lord the king. But my lord the king is as an angel of God. Do therefore what is good in thine eyes. Now, I tell you who I believe. I believe Mephibosheth. Okay? First of all, a guy shows up, hasn't bathed and hadn't shaved since the king's been gone. Second of all, instead of saying, I got slandered, give me back my own, that's not what he said. Look in verse 28. Again, reading the end of verse 27. Do therefore what is good in thine eyes. For all of my father's house were but dead men before my lord the king. Yet didst thou set thy servant among them that did eat at thine own table. What right, therefore, have I yet to cry any more unto the king? I mean, this guy is saying, you know, Dave, you can do what you want to do with the stuff. I count it an honor to be at your table. And for you to have done, you know, what you've done for me. And, you know, in the end, I tell you the sad part. In the end, verse 29, and the king said unto him, why speakest thou any more of thy matters? I have said, thou and Ziba divide the land. So David goes from it all being Mephibosheth's to him giving it to Ziba, and now he says, I don't know what to do, you guys divide it. So Ziba still gets half more than he was going to get, right? And it goes on to say, verse 30, now again, this is why I believe Mephibosheth. And Mephibosheth said unto the king, yea, let him take all. Now next time that you're in a dispute, whether with the Lord or whatever, you know, check your heart on that thing. You know, how many folks you know that get, messed over and then say, it's fine. Your blessings are good enough for me. Let him take it all. You know what I mean? Verse 30, and Mephibosheth said unto the king, yea, let him take all, for as much as my lord the king has come again in peace unto his own house. I mean, you know what he's glad for? He's glad that the king's back. And apparently, the king didn't tell him he couldn't eat at his own table anymore, that he wasn't his son, that his protection was over. I mean, this guy is a guy that's saved, And still has his salvation and all those sort of things. It's the type of that. But folks, you stop and look at it. I mean, Ziba's a rascal. David got hornswoggled by Jonadab. Remember that guy? And then he gets hornswoggled by this guy, winds up believing him because he's the first there with the story. What does the Bible say? A man is first in his own cause, but his neighbor come and searcheth him out. You know, the first guy, you know, the guy that's going to, you say, okay, you know, what happened? Well, that guy is going to give you his side of the story and probably going to slant things a little bit his way, right? But his neighbor come and searcheth him out. Now, it's too bad. I mean, David wasn't probably in shape to send out a private investigator to figure out exactly what happened. Whether he impetuously gave Ziba the land or not, I don't know. But I know that by the time it's all over, I know that Ziba's a rascal. Ziba undertook to slander somebody for no particular reason. Mephibosheth had never, as far as we know, been anything but loyal to David. And by the time the thing's over with, he still wasn't anything but loyal to David. He said, fine, take everything. I'm just happy to be where I am. You know what I'm saying? Ziba's a rascal. And, you know, the sad part is that his work was irreversible. I mean, Mephibosheth got half back, but he still wasn't fully reinstated in David's graces. He still wasn't fully, you know, fully rectified of the matter that had been, the charge that had been laid against him. Folks, that's a problem with slander, is, you know, once a slander is spoken against somebody, you know, that's what I can't stand about this modern day where, you know, everybody's peering over everybody's shoulder to see if they're abusing their kids and all this kind of stuff. Because, you know, once there's a charge laid, once there's, you know, any kind of a sexual innuendo laid, anytime there's a child abuse charge laid, then whoever heard it, it's still in the back of everybody's mind. No matter whether the guy's innocent or not, no matter whether there was ever any reason to think any different, no matter whether it was so or not, it still, you know, raises people's consciousness, and it's still in the back of everybody's mind. That's the sad part about it. So here is David, and he kind of fell for the thing himself and winds up dividing land that should have been Mephibosheth's anyway. Now, folk, where that started was slander. Look in Proverbs 12. You guys know these verses. Proverbs 12. Once in a while, it's wise for Bible believers to take a tour through some verses and to remember that our opinions are not always sanctified, and that just because we viewed something one particular way, it doesn't give us a right necessarily to lambaste somebody. Look in Proverbs chapter 12 and notice just a small sampling, verse 22. Don't forget, folks, that lying lips are an abomination to the Lord. Okay? I mean, whether, you know, it's a lie about you in your favor, a lie about someone else, even if it is just a tonal thing, even if it's just something to make sure that someone else gets the impression of something, folks, that thing is, if the lips are lying, it's still an abomination to the Lord. Right? It goes for all of us. Right? It gets tempting sometimes from the pulpit to tell a story that didn't happen because it would make a great illustration. I can't do that. You know what I'm saying? Look in chapter 16, verse 27, Proverbs. Proverbs 16, 27. And this is quite a passage here for what it's worth. If you're like me and try to read a proverb a day, you know, for the month and that sort of thing, you know, one of the things that you learn real quick is that the mouth, the mouth, the mouth, the mouth, the mouth, the mouth. You know? Proverbs 16, verse 24. Pleasant words are as an honeycomb, sweet to the soul, health to the bones. There's a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. He that laboreth for himself, for his mouth craveth it of him. And then it says, an ungodly man diggeth up evil. Goes out of the way to dig it up and expose it. Now, folks, you and I both know that there's a time to expose what's wrong, what's sin. But it's something that the Bible also says that love covereth a multitude of sins. Okay? You know, there are things that are best left lying buried. And it says that an ungodly man diggeth up evil and his lips are as a burning fire. A froward man soweth strife, and a whisperer separateth chief friends. Now that's what happened with Ziba. I mean, Mephibosheth, from all appearances, loved David from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet. And what Ziba did in one singular day with one singular speech was managed to separate chief friends and to sow something, sow strife in something that apparently, at least there's no record, that it was ever repaired. That's a sad thing. Verse 29, a violent man enticeth his neighbor and leadeth him into a way that is not good. Just a couple more verses. Look at chapter 11, Proverbs 11. Just a reminder, 11:13. A talebearer revealeth secrets, but he that is of a faithful spirit concealeth the matter. Now, folks, you know, if there's some horrible scandal going on and that needs to be revealed, it needs to be revealed. But most of the things that tear up Bible-believing churches are not scandals. They're petty little gripey personal things that are easily blown up and easily fabricated beyond what they are. You know what I'm saying? Are you with me? I know it's quiet. I'm not griping at any of you. I'm just telling you. Look at chapter 18. Chapter 18, verse 8. And you know, you can finish the verse as soon as I start it. The words of a talebearer are as wounds, and they go down into the innermost parts of the belly. All right, back to 2 Samuel 16. I think I'm going to stop there. My voice is about shot, and I wanted to give Lonnie, Brother Lonnie, I wanted to give you 20 or 25 minutes if you were able to. I walked in, and my wife and I were talking on the way, and my voice was all wacky. I walked in and saw Lonnie. I said, there's my way out. So he was pretty excited when I walked in, so I wanted him to get up and be able to give you a kind of a report on what happened over there. Brother Lonnie, come ahead.